Hello, Nerd Nation, and welcome to the only six-star wrestling podcast on planet Earth. This is the Good Brothers Wrestling Podcast. I am your host, Jordan the Body Fox, and with me again today is our main man, Ray Cash. Ray, what's up, brother?
What's happening, man? How you been?
I'm doing good, man. How about you?
Living life, brother. Living life. It's we got a week to WrestleMania, so, you know, the goosebumps are starting to creep up.
Getting excited?
I'm that fan that's excited to watch 205 Live. Like, I'm excited about everything.
Okay.
So
I got you.
So the closer we get, yeah, it's like a really, really high level of excitement right now, yeah.
I got you. Are you excited about TakeOver as well, I take it then?
Actually, as you know, I'm a diehard WWE fan, but in terms of enjoyment, I've been a bigger NXT fan than WWE for a while, so yes.
Really?
I'm probably, yeah, oh yeah. Like I told you, man, when NXT was only coming on Hulu, when it was Jinder Mahal versus Seth Rollins for the first NXT championship, or when Tyler Breeze was still Mike Dalton, you know, or CJ Parker was still there and he was the love child and all that, you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Like I was watching back then.
Okay.
So yeah. So I have followed the product. I love it. It's not a bare bones wrestling show. It's a simpler styled wrestling show. NXT reminds me a lot of what Nitro was at the beginning of the NWO.
Okay.
When before it got super, super, super mainstream, when it was just everybody got a feud. Let's do this. Let's move on. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. I watched the build up. Well, actually, I watched it, but a better way to say it is during when War Games happened, right?
Yeah. I was there. I was at War Games.
What? Were you really?
Yeah, that was in Houston.
No, I forgot
about
that.
That was Survivor Series weekend, yeah.
Was it sweet, dude?
It was awesome, bro. And so, you know, that was right after Harvey.
Uh-huh.
Right after the hurricane. So the crowd wasn't super packed, but it was 75% full.
Uh-huh.
Me and my homeboy, we had literally the whole row to ourselves and the row in front of us to ourselves. So we were having a blast because we were having wrestling matches in the crowd. We were doing everything.
That's awesome, man. That is awesome.
When I tell you that, bro, that 75% full Toyota Center was loud as hell.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah, when everybody got ready to say Adam Cole, baby, it was like through the roof.
That's sweet, man. Yeah. Well, what I was going to say was the build up for that, when it was Authors of Pain and Roderick Strong versus Sanity versus the Undisputed Era, like just watching the promo package for that, is I don't know what makes me always think back to that when I think of NXT compared to WWE, but it just, they make it look like it's in a smaller arena, it's not as well lit, and it's just more of a rabid fan base, and the what they show you is just, it just looks better to me. I don't really know how to explain it. I
can explain it for you.
Okay, let's hear it.
So, WWE, people think the WWE creative and the heads are stupid, right?
Okay.
A lot of the time, we do. As a fan base, we think that Vince is senile or out of touch. We think creative isn't good at their job, this, that, and the other. The one thing WWE has excelled at for 30 years is misdirection.
Okay.
They have excelled at making you think they're bad at something so you like it. Right? The Daniel Bryan situation is number one. They made you think they didn't like Daniel Bryan when all along they loved the kid. I don't even want to go down that rabbit hole right now. But, so when it, in terms of NXT, Triple H is given a blank slate. Vince told him, do what you want. Right?
Okay.
So, it's filmed at the auditorium of a college, right? They probably hold 500 people max, maybe 1,000. I don't even think they can fit 1,000 in there. So it's small. They tape three, four shows a night when they tape, you know, so they're able to edit it to high hell. You know, like the edit is so much. Mauro Ranallo edits all the commentary from his house.
Really?
Yeah. Listen to the show now. Since Mauro came back, listen to the show, and when he's doing a segment like a segue to another thing or whatever, or when they're advertising the match, the sound quality is different than it is when he's live, because he's recording that from home. But and then it's a smaller it's a smaller venue, but the smartest thing they've ever done is they, so they're in Orlando, Full Sail's in Orlando. They of course the top guys tour, you know, around the country, but the main guy, like the regular guys who aren't known, literally just tour around the Orlando and the South Florida area. So that's why when a guy like Velveteen Dream debuts, everybody know him. Because everybody in that crowd, they done been to all those shows.
I never knew that.
So we don't know him, and we get weeks and weeks and weeks of vignettes and whatnot, but the crowd knows him. So that's the reason why a Bayley works, because she was able to build super slow in front of the same crowds over. Emma's the best example that NXT has done in general. When Emma debuted, Emma was annoying as hell. That dumb music, that dumb dance. But the reason she got over was because it was the same crowds over and over and over, and she became endearing because we found out she could wrestle. Then the dance became endearing. Right? Uh-huh. And that's when she got over. But she, that wouldn't happen if you were in Tampa on Monday, and then you're on in Orlando on Tuesday, and then you're in Atlanta on next Monday, and then you're in Charlotte next Tuesday, then you're in New York. It's not going to happen. That's why NXT is so different than WWE, and why NXT guys don't always work in WWE, because it ain't the same crowd.
So it's more of a regional promotion. It's more like throwback to the territories.
Absolutely, it is literally WCW Lite. I would say completely, because the reason I was gonna say no, because WCW had, you know, an affinity and a hard on for WWE rejects, but the main guys in NXT are indie guys.
Uh huh.
Adam Cole comes in all of a sudden; he's one of the top guys. Aleister Black comes in, one of the top guys. Andrade, who was the king of Mexico at one point, you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
So, and it's so harder for guys like Lars Sullivan and Velveteen Dream and these guys to make their ranks up, because they're homegrown. And NXT has got so big now that they don't have the luxury like they had 3-4 years ago when Finn started. Or, in fact, before that, when Hideo started. So, you know Hideo Itami's first feud, and Finn Balor's first feud was against the Ascension, right?
Okay.
We look at the Ascension on the main roster's trash. The Ascension in NXT was just as trash. The difference was that same crowd got so over with that same crowd that the presentation looked great. Connor used to do this thing where when he kicked, he would say yeah, and the crowd would go crazy every time they hit somebody. Yeah, 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 because they see it over and over and over again. The Ascension was never really good in the ring. Vic Victor is a good wrestler on his own, but as a tag team, they were never really good. And they never wrestled anybody. At the takeovers, the first takeover they wrestled Too Cool. The second takeover they wrestled Ricardo Rodriguez in a mask and Kalisto. The third takeover they wrestled Kalisto and the Lucha Dragons and Sin Cara, and they lost. They didn't wrestle nobody. They didn't.
I'd like to ask them if they missed their NXT days, because they were, you know, kind of shown as to be like a better tag team in NXT, and they come up and they barely even get TV time, you know, on the main roster, and when they do, it's, you know, maybe a 3-minute skip backstage with, you know, the Fashion Files or something.
Well, creative failed them hard. This is one situation which creative did fail them, because creative tried to make them LOD or Road Warriors like, and literally, not just because of their look, but they literally said we're better than the Road Warriors in their first promo for their vignette.
Oh wow!
So that already had a bad taste in fans' mouths, because I'm not a huge Road Warriors fan. I like them and all, but that's what most people think of the best tag team in the world. And anybody our age and up, we look at them with a little higher esteem because we saw their height.
Yeah.
And then they proceed to have their very first feud against the Outlaws, and they get beat down by the Outlaws and by DX and by APA. So they're made to look like jabronis.
Hmm.
And they never recovered from that. And Vince is notorious with these NXT guys, and this is definitely his fault, but it's the fans' fault too, because the fans build these guys up who they know probably ain't gonna. NXT is the crowd like the European crowds at the Raw, the WrestleMania, right? In that they entertain themselves a lot of the time. NXT is a great crowd, but they do things to entertain themselves. So sometimes, like Blue Pants, for example, I don't know if you even know who that is. Uh-huh. Lita Bates.
Yeah.
She got over because she wore blue pants.
Right.
Literally. No other reason, but she wore blue pants, and Enzo and Cass was made fun of her. That's why she got over. Literally. NXT crowd will find people, and especially a few years ago, and entertain themselves because they like this person. You know, they didn't necessarily do anything to get liked. They're just entertaining themselves. So Vince sees these people getting cheers like crazy. I remember the first NXT TakeOver Brooklyn, my boys Blake and Murphy, I have a very, very high affinity for those guys, and Alexa fought the Va Villains. And so the Va Villains, the whole story of that match was they could never beat Blake and Murphy because Alexa would always come in and mess them up. So they said they found somebody to help them, and Blue Pants came out. Now, this is in Brooklyn, in the Barclays, 14,000 strong. The crowd went crazy for Blue Pants. She's never done anything on WWE television. She's never done anything of note. In fact, she never won a match. She only was there for squashes. But they entertained themselves. So Vince sees that. And then he'll call you up, the Va Villains, for example. They were over as hell. And then he'll call you up expecting for you to get a huge response on your call-up because you did it there. And then nobody knows you because it's a different crowd.
Right.
You know, WWE is more casual. There's a lot of hardcores in the crowd. Don't get me twisted. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole either. But WWE is mainstream. Like Kurt Angle used to say when he was in TNA, people would see him in the airport and they'd be like, or even Kevin Nash, "Hey, man, so I haven't seen you on WWE in a while. What you doing?" He's like, "I've been in TNA for 8 years. Yeah.
Kevin Nash asked him that?
No, people in the airport.
Oh, people asked Kevin Nash that as well.
Or Kevin Nash, or Booker when he was over there, or Sting.
Got you. That's who you're saying.
WCW. I've been in TNA for like 12 years, bro. You know, because WWE is the king of the mountain. So WWE is like the NFL. You know? WWE is like, I don't know, like whatever major, you know, it's the top of the top, even if it's not always the best. So people are always going to look at you in that pretense, in that light. So, yeah, NXT just isn't a perfect situation because NXT literally cannot fail. They have the perfect, they're in the perfect situation in that they're always going to have the same small crowd. They're trying to do different crowds, but in terms of tapings, Triple H knows not to put them in a taping situation consistently above more than 1,000 unless it's like the special show that's taped before TakeOver. He knows better. You know.
So do you think the transfer from the NXT roster to the main roster, do you think when Triple H takes over the main roster, will he have something set up where the transition is better and it's less likely for a talent to go from NXT and WWE and fail?
Like, absolutely.
You think so?
Yeah, but it's twofold. Because you could have the perfect storyline, but if the crowd ain't into it, then, you know, it's a waste. I was watching one of those documentaries about NXT, and Triple H was... it was the one at ESPN they did, the ESPN 60, and they followed... Adam Rose, because in that he was still the old Kruger, and he had to, if he didn't find a new gimmick to work, he was going to get fired.
Okay.
Xavier Woods, who had just got called up, and Big Cass, who was just coming back from injury, because that was when he got injured the first time. And it was like a really, really, they had never lifted the veil to the point where they actually showed you the inside of a creative meeting before. Like, it was really, like, engaging stuff. And Triple H was like, "Look, we got people to call up. But I'm not calling anybody up unless we have a 6-month storyline for them. 6 months booked." So Triple H is in the process of, we need to give these guys the right story. you know. But look at a guy like Xavier Woods, who literally had a 2-3 month story. Maybe not six, but you know, he had a real story laid out for him when he debuted. The crowd wasn't with it. So what do you do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I'm trying to think. Like, what? I mean, what do you do? You know.
But Xavier Woods, who is extremely charismatic, extremely smart, really good wrestler, but he's not even known for his wrestling. And he's a great, he's a really good dancer. His gimmick in NXT was he was this millennial nerd who liked, you know, Ninja Turtles and Power Rangers and Dragon Ball Z and loved to dance. He liked to have fun, right? That was his gimmick.
Probably not too far off his real life, right?
No, it's literally almost the same thing except less dancing, more video games, but yeah.
Yeah.
And he gets called up. And if that's your gimmick in NXT, what you're known for, then it made perfect sense to pair him with Brodus Clay. And what they did was, Brodus wasn't there that night, and he had to team with R-Truth. R-Truth found a guy to replace Brodus for that night. Xavier came out with the Funkadactyls to the Brodus' song and danced, and Brodus got pissed. It makes perfect sense on paper.
Yeah.
Crowd wasn't with it. What can you do?
Yeah.
So you wonder what you wonder why Xavier floundered? It's not that creative failed him. It's that just the crowd wasn't with it, and that happens. But fans will say, oh, well, they should have gave something better for Xavier. Well, what do you expect him to do when that's what he was? It's not like you can make Xavier into Stone Cold Steve Austin overnight.
Yeah, I think that's a problem that a lot of fans, and I even catch myself thinking like that from time to time. You know, I'm,
we all do it.
You know,
we all do it.
Yeah, we all do it. But thinking if you see a real good worker and they're in a crappy storyline, you're like, man, why didn't they have something better? Well, a lot of times if you think about it on paper, yeah, that stuff is gold on paper, and it just sometimes it just does not correlate, does not translate to when it's actually acted out. You know, it's just like a movie script.
Absolutely.
I bet there's been millions of movie scripts that, you know, look like five star, you know, look like, you know, classics that are going to break box office records. And when they're made, it's just like, bleh, you know?
That movie, that the very first sci-fi movie, real sci-fi movie Disney did. And this is Disney, right? Disney own everything.
Right.
It was John Carter, and it spent something like $300 million, some crazy amount of money. And it probably made like maybe $50 million. It was one of the biggest box office bombs in history. You know what Disney did after that?
What'd they do?
They bought Lucasfilm and bought Star Wars. Because they realized, we don't know how to do this.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I didn't know that. Yeah.
But, so yeah, everything on paper looked right for John Carter. Or, in fact, a more relevant one, Will Smith in After Earth. Or anything DC's done. Batman versus Superman.
Yeah.
You know? It looks great on paper. But sometimes the people just ain't with it.
Right, right.
There's no failure in anybody's part. Things happen.
True story.
You take what you got and you learn. And what the best thing from that situation with Xavier was, you know what, he dropped back, then he punted. Same thing with Big E. Big E failed, dropped back, and they punted, and they became one of the, they got together, and they made one of the best stables ever. New Day.
Yeah, and that stable is over. Boy, them boys are over.
Doing the same thing. They have not. They haven't upgraded their act in like 3 years, dog.
And they're still entertaining. It's not like they're over for no reason. Like, they're entertaining.
Absolutely. But it's crazy because in this day and age, in which the fan base is more educated than it's ever been, and it's more demanding than it's ever been. I'm not saying that in a bad sense. We just know more. So if you know more, you expect more. And yet, the only thing that the New Day does now different than what they did before was Xavier wrestles more, and instead of Bootios, it's pancakes.
Yeah, why did they make that switch to Bootios to pancakes? Is there a reason, or did they just do it just to change
there
up a little
something? There actually is a reason. There's a reason.
Okay, let's hear it.
They were supposed to be in a lumberjack match, and so Xavier was like, "Well, if we're lumberjacks eat flapjacks, right?" So they just brought flapjacks out to throw at people in the lumberjack match just for fun, and it got over. So they kept going. It's the same thing with Francesco the Trombone. That was never meant to be full-time. He did one, and it got over. So, you know.
What's he, is he on Francesca 2 or 3 by now?
Francesca 2, thanks to Chris Jericho, yes.
Jericho, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of overstables, let's talk about the Bullet Club for a little bit, shall we?
I've been looking forward to this.
So, who wants it? You want to explain what the Bullet Club is, or how you want to do this?
If you want me to, I can. I can give a good little synopsis of it.
Give us a little synopsis of it.
So, to give a synopsis of the Bullet Club, you have to understand the scene of New Japan Wrestling. In Japan, wrestling is looked at as a sport. Of course, people know that it's scripted, but it's looked at more as sport than here, wrestling is like entertainment, which is why their matches are more realistic and they get a lot more higher ratings because they're wrestling as it's a sport. So a foreigner in Japan is known as a geijin. Well, normally in Japan, it's about honor and fighting spirit, of course there's bad guys and there's good guys, but they didn't have the Americanized style of heels as we do, where people jump people and just do vicious things. It wasn't traditionally like that. The crowd didn't even really make noise. The crowd is quiet during most of the matches because it's looked at to be respectful. They're enjoying you, but it's a respect thing. So,
right.
Anyway, I say all that to say that the Bullet Club was a stable of Gaijins, was a stable of foreigners led by Prince Devitt, who turned on Raisuke Taguchi, who's the leader of Taguchi Japan now, if you are a current wrestler or known as a coach. That was a tag team partner in Apollo 55. And he turned on him and joined with Carl Anderson, known as Machine Gun back then, Tama Tonga, and Bad Luck Fale. And they created the Bullet Club. And their idea, or the thought process behind them joining together and storyline was, well, New Japan doesn't give us the opportunities we deserve because we're not Japanese, so we're going to take over the company. It literally was a 2010s version of the NWO. And in fact, they were so NWO light that they started using the Too Sweet. They started using the Bullet Club as For Life. They used the black and white. They really adopted a lot of the earlier, NWO heel tactics, if you will, because Japan, at least New Japan, hadn't really seen it to that level live. Then the Bucks, Young Bucks joined next, and Doc Gallows joined after that. And that's what you know as the OG Bullet Club, because that's the originals. And, of course, the New Bucks always kind of were DX light, if you will, with the sophomoric antics and the suck it and all that. And then it just became such a cultural phenomenon in Japan, because nobody had ever seen anything like that to that level, which got over in America. And then as they continue to add more people and do more merchandise, the Young Bucks are genuine geniuses when it comes to marketing. Literally, they should not be wrestling. They should be like the owners of a marketing firm. They're geniuses at it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I seen an article one time where they were pretty much described as full-time t-shirt salesmen, part-time wrestlers.
Literally.
Yeah.
The reason the Bucks don't have to go to WWE is because they've gotten so good. The Bucks literally on their own created, they inked a nationally syndicated t-shirt deal with a top-level t-shirt store on their own.
Right.
Not their agent, not the company, just on their own, the Bucks, Nick and Matt Jackson. It's fascinating. The Bullet Club has become one of the main stables in New Japan, and it's gotten so famous all over America, and it's become literally pop culture. Like, you used to see regular people in the streets with NWO shirts. Now, in some places, you'll see regular people in the streets with Bullet Club shirts. And, it's gotten cool. It's become the cool thing to like, and they've added... They've been very, very selective in who they add, and they've added the hot member. They added Adam Cole at his hottest. They added Marty Scurll at his hottest. They added Cody at his hottest. They've done really well in under those pretenses. They added AJ Styles at his hottest, non-WWE. They've been really, really done really well about that. So the Bullet Club is looked at as the top act in wrestling by non-WWE people. And some non-WWE people think it's the top act in wrestling, even including WWE people.
Yeah, it's to put it lightly, for me anyway, it is the stable. Chris Jericho got my eyes on New Japan, but the Bullet Club has kept my eyes on New Japan, if that makes any sense at all.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, and these are some of the best. I mean, like, their leader right now is Kenny Omega. He took over at the beginning of 2016 after AJ Styles, Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows all inked a deal with WWE. Right. And, I mean, this is one of the best wrestlers in the world. And he took over from one of the best wrestlers in the world in AJ Styles.
Yep.
You know, and AJ Styles, when he took over from Prince Devitt, correct? Or did Carl Anderson lead for a little bit? Somewhere in there, Carl Anderson was the leader for a short time, right?
Carl Anderson was never the sole leader. Carl Anderson was always the co-leader.
Okay. Well, and, you know, even the founding father, if you will, Prince Devitt, Finn Balor, also one of the best workers in the world.
Yeah.
So
the leader of the Bullet Club situation is definitely a prestigious one.
Yeah, and I can't ever remember the booker's name over in New Japan.
Yano.
Yeah, he's seen when these guys caught fire the year that they were formed in April of 2013. Like, he's seen how hot these guys were, and they booked them so strong.
I want to say this real quick. I want you to finish, but I think Gedo's greatest strength as a booker is he trusts his people.
Right.
So he had, because, you know, Gedo in terms of wrestling is a member of Chaos. Kazuchika Okada, how do you say his first name? I never say it right. Right, that's his guy, you know? In fact, Chaos was created by Shinsuke Nakamura.
Uh-huh.
But for Gedo to trust the Bullet Club guys, these American guys, these Gaijin foreigners, to do the thing that they've done takes a lot of trust. So I wanted to give him credit for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to say that, you know, how good is it he booked them in, you know, they formed in 2013, and out of the five tournaments that New Japan had in 2013, the Bullet Club won three of them, you know?
Yeah.
So I just thought it was insane. I have a list of the current members here. So Bad Luck Fale, Cody Rhodes, Hangman Page, Kenny Omega, Marty Scurll, the Young Bucks, Matt and Nick Jackson, Tama Tonga, I can never say his name.
Tongaloa.
Yeah,
they changed it.
Yeah,
Tongaloa. It was Tongaloa at first, but it's Tongaloa, yeah.
Yeah, Tongaloa, and then Takahashi.
There's a couple more you missed, but they're not very super important.
Is it Chase Owens one of them, too?
Chase Owens, yeah.
Yeah, Chase Owens
who was the American Tongan.
Yeah.
and Hiko Leo is Tama Tonga and Tongaloa's brother.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, I had Chase Owens written down here, but I didn't say it for some reason. It was on the end of the list, and I because I have some former members written down as well, so I just got them confused.
Well, Chase and Takahashi, or Tokyo Pimp, as I call them, because I struggle with a lot of Japanese names.
Same here.
They're kind of like the Horace Hogan and the Virgil. No disrespect, because they're great wrestlers, but, you know, when you look at the list. You know, of all the Bullet Club members, they're definitely the lowest. And Hiko Leo is the young boy. So there's a thing in New Japan where they have young boys, where the people who are training stay in the dojo and are literally the lowest of the low. They are completely humbled. You know, they eat at the same time, they sleep at the same time, they sleep in a dojo and very, very modest things. And then before they actually get booked, you ever see the main events where they have the people around the ring and the New Japan shirts? Those are young boys. So they're getting a chance to kind of see what they're going to do in this, that, and the other. But Hiko Leo was the Bullet Club young boy.
I was going to ask you, so with the splintering of the Bullet Club, as you will, with the whole Kenny Omega versus Cody Rhodes and everything like that, where do you think the Bullet Club goes from here?
So I think what they're doing is genius, because Bullet Club is getting stale. Yeah, they always going to wrestle great matches. Yeah, they're going to sell merch. But in terms of storylines, they were getting stale. The tough thing for the Bullet Club is, by nature, the Bullet Club is a heel stable. By nature, right? But everybody in the Bullet Club was so over. and I don't mean over in terms of, and I mean over in terms of cheers. Kenny is a natural babyface. The Young Bucks, since they've toned down their act, have become more babyface-ish, you know, which is the beauty of Hangman and Cody. Cody in particular being the one to fracture the group. So the reason I say it's genius is because everybody has a storyline now. Before, you know, and New Japan is notorious for having a shitload of tag team matches or trios matches. But now, everybody got a story. So, you have the story of Cody trying to break up the whole Bullet Club, but in particular, the Bucks and Kenny. You have Kenny, who is struggling with the fact that he couldn't beat Okada, couldn't win the world title, won the U.S. title with Jericho, lost the U.S. title, and is struggling with leading the Bullet Club and having beef with Cody and getting back with Ibushi and all these things he's dealing with. You have Hangman, who's trying to prove himself because he's the unknown of you know, of at least the Americanized Bullet Club. Marty Scurll, who was in the Kenny position and that he was the junior guy and is trying to build himself up, and, you know, Marty, who might genuinely be the most over guy in the entire group right now.
Oh, yeah, I would have to agree with that.
The Tongans were, since they're strictly New Japan, don't get the love that the rest of them do, and they're getting it now because they're OG Bullet Club, and hipsters are, oh, well, you know, I'm Bullet Club for life, so I like the OGs, and you know, so now Tama Tonga's getting some love, and, you know, and Chase is kind of, it's funny that he thinks he's Tongan now, that's the joke. So, like, everybody has a storyline now with this fracturing, whereas before, wrestling. Now, there's reasons behind, and I'd say 80% of this is owed to the Being the Elite YouTube series.
Right.
But 80%, because that's where New Japan is not good with telling stories on television. They're not good with it. Because they're so sport related that, yeah, they'll have a couple of promos. They'll have a promo. I always have a promo after the last match, but they'll have their build up videos before a match. But in terms of like what WWE does, where they have segments which show why people don't like it, what Sasha and Bayley like Monday, and what in their segment, they don't do that. So you get a real chance of seeing why these things are happening, at least with the Bullet Club and the Being the Elite YouTube series.
I dig it. So while we're talking about New Japan, I got a question. Do you watch your New Japan on their streaming service or on Access TV?
I don't watch New Japan often. I have Sling TV, so, you know, I don't have access on my regular TV, but I have Sling TV.
Okay. I was just going to ask you if you had an opinion on the difference between the commentary on the streaming service and then Josh Barnett and JR on Access TV.
Well, I've been a big proponent. No, this comes up disrespectful. I don't mean it to be, you know, just because you criticize somebody doesn't mean that you're being mean.
Right.
It's been terrible for about close to 10 years now, in my opinion.
Yeah.
He's, you know, a lot of it is owed to his health, and I respect that. I take that into consideration, especially, you know, when his wife died, God rest her soul, and he came right back literally like a few days later and called the main event of WrestleMania 33.
Yeah, it was like, what was it, less than 72 hours after she had passed? I know she had a car wreck and was in the hospital for a few days, but after she passed, I want to say it was less than 72 hours, and he showed up at 33, you know, I mean.
Yeah, well, Vince called.
I'm sure part of that was, you know, wanting to get back to work to try to, you know, get it off his mind. You know, I'm sure there was a lot of stress, and he probably just, you know, how people when they're going through something like that, a lot of times guys just want to go back to work to try to keep their mind off of it.
But normalcy.
Yeah. To try to get some form of normalcy back.
Well, you know, this is the side of Vince that a lot of people don't get to see. Vince called them, and, you know, they're friends.
Right.
They spent so much close time together for 20 plus years. They're friends. And, you know, was checking up on them and all this. And I guess the conversation struck it. I guess Vince said, well, you know, if you want to come back and call a match, please do. We'd love to have you. it's good being with family. And JR was like, hell yeah. That's really cool. Good for him to be around all his friends and to be around the people that he loves and that love him, you know, because everybody knew Jan in the wrestling circle. So that was good for him. But in terms of, I don't even think JR is that terrible of a commentator. His issue is he doesn't know the product.
Right.
So, you know, Strong Style Evolved, he called Zack Sabre Ospreay. Zack Sabre has a world title match.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like these things are, like, they're, he called Jay Briscoe Matt Briscoe at the Strong Style Evolved last year. They look, I mean, they're brothers, sure, but they look, Jay has the crazy hair, Mark has long hair. Like, they, Mark has no teeth. They look different. You know? And so, he just doesn't know the product, and that coupled with him not being as sharp as he used to be because of age and health, and then Jasper, that's just, she's just trash.
Yeah.
He's a great MMA fighter, but he's just trash when it comes to calling matches. Now, Don Callis, Kevin Kelly, great at the job. They're a little overboard, but I'm sure that's, every company has specific, you know, they all have specific styles that they want to be called. But yeah, they're great if you're watching New Japan World. But God, dog, that Barnett. And you know, it was Mauro Ranallo who had the job before Jim Ross.
On Access Television?
Yeah.
What? No, I didn't know that. If I'd have known that, I'd been watching it a long time ago. I actually didn't even know that New Japan came on Access TV until Jericho was going over there, and that's really where my eyes were brought on to the product, I guess you could say. And I wish I would have been on it years before, you know?
See, Mauro is a king at getting that money or getting them checks.
Oh, yeah.
Because Mauro was calling New Japan and WWE at the same time until that contract ended. And he still calls other MMA organizations, and he calls Showtime Boxing.
Yep.
Getting them checks, and he has a radio show with Boss Rudin.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Homie getting that money, bro.
That's what I remember from his Showtime Boxing. He's on the he's on the pre-fight panel, and he's the color commentator. Or he might be play-by-play. I'm not
play-by-play. Yeah,
he's play-by-play. But I absolutely love Mauro Ranallo, dude. He's one of the best. He's one of the best in the game today. You know,
I prefer him when he's calling real sports, because he's really good. He's a really good commentator, but it takes me out when you, like, you're trying harder to give pop culture references than you are calling the match. like, and it'd be one thing if you did it every so often. He does it so often because he knows it pops the fans.
Right.
And that annoys me personally. Like, and that's just me. But I was the same way with Joey Styles, and Joey Styles was great.
Yeah.
But it was the same for me. Like, I want you to be engaged, and I want you to tell stories, but don't go too far, dog.
Yeah.
And I think Mauro goes far a bit too much. Nothing against his talent. He's great at his job. This is a personal thing.
I understand that. All right, man. So my final question for you before we get off the air. If you could book the WrestleMania main event this year, what would you do? It doesn't have to be Lesnar and Reigns. If you could have started booking from, let's say, the Royal Rumble, you could have picked who won the Royal Rumble, and then from there on to the main event of WrestleMania, what would you do? What would you do different, or would you do it the exact same?
I like the card. I think the card is very well built, you know, given the situation they've been given. But, so, if I had free reign to book, I would have done one of two things. Okay? I either would have tried to build, the first women's main event, whether that be Charlotte and Asuka or Rousey and Charlotte or whatever it is, given whatever I was given. But I think those situations, some mix of those three women can really change the scope of women's wrestling.
Oh yeah, I think, you know, that baton has been carried so far, and it's unbelievable in just the last 2 years how far they've carried that thing, and I think these women right here are going to take it even to the next level. which is surprising to even think about as far as they've come already, and these girls are going to take it, these ladies are going to take it further.
Absolutely. But other than that, you know, my dream main event of WrestleMania is a Shield triple threat, but we can't have that. Dean got hurt. So what I would have liked to have seen is, I think the story that they told between Brock and Braun was perfect. The first match they had one-on-one, Braun dominated him in the build-up. Braun dominated him in the match until Lesnar, who was a vet, took advantage of a mistake Braun made, beat the kid. Braun, we have to remember, Braun's been wrestling less than 4 years.
Okay.
The second encounter, Braun dominated, just like always, Braun dominated Lesnar, took Lesnar out of the match in the Fatal 4-Way at the SummerSlam main event, and Lesnar won, but he beat Roman. Braun had nothing to do with the finish. What I would have done is I would have had, even if you want to throw Kane in there, that doesn't matter to me, I would have had Braun win the main event, Braun win the title at Royal Rumble, and have a rematch between Brock and Braun. And I think I mentioned this to you in another podcast or a conversation, have the same thing that brought Lesnar into the WWE bring Lesnar out.
Mm-hmm.
And have Heyman turn on Lesnar to go with the new young buck with Braun.
Right.
That
right.
way, you kill three birds with one stone. You write Brock out of storylines and give him a reason to come back if he wants to. You know, but Brock leaves on his back the way every wrestler should, one. Number two, you keep Heyman and you give Braun a mouthpiece, because Braun's a decent talker, but you're the main event, right?
Right.
That's a different level of talking.
Absolutely.
And three, now you've built Braun. If you want to keep Braun as a baby, you want to keep Braun as a heel, whatever you want, you've built Braun into the top monster, because every time you see him beat the unbeatable guy, like, he's dominating. So that's what I would have done. And I think the story that they could have told with that, if they would have mentioned everything in the whole build-up, you know, from the very beginning to the final match, I think it could have been a really, really big deal. Plus, Braun is the guy that the fans want right now, and I'm not a big proponent of that, but I'm cognizant of that.
You're not a big proponent of doing what the fans want necessarily, or
not all the time, because what the fans want changes from day to day.
Okay,
so if you're trying to book 6 months and the fans change every month, there's no way you can do long-term booking, but then the fans are going to complain that there's no long-term booking. Well, they changed it.
Yeah.
So sometimes you have to go with what the fans want, but sometimes you have to say, well, you know what? We'll tell you what you want because we're trying to tell the story. And you can't tell the story if every time. So if. Let me flip it for you. Let's say if you're reading to your son, reading a story.
Okay.
And every time you go 5 pages into the book, the kid says, oh, no, change the story, Daddy. I don't like that. You're never going to get to the book.
Yeah, I understand.
and he might miss out on a great story, but he's not going to get it because he wants it different. Well, man, sit down and hear the story first. If you don't like it at the end, then we'll change it then.
I like it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good analogy. It's a good way to put it.
Yeah, and you know, if you look at my history from writing and just wrestling in general, you know, I have a very, very contentious relationship with fans in general because of things like this. I don't hate fans, but I hate this thought process that fans should control the show. They shouldn't. We don't work in wrestling. We're there to be entertained. We're not there to tell them what they should do. Now, if we get behind a person, they should notice that. But, you know, we're not supposed, I don't think, at least me, I don't think that it's our job to tell them, hey, do this. No. Cheer for who you want, boo for who you want, and that should be enough to tell for the Vince and the Triple H and the booking team to realize, oh, well, you know what? They're really behind this kid. We should push him.
It's true. That's very true, right? Man.
Now, the more you tell, and if you came to my job and you don't work in my job, you don't work in my field, you're just some random person. You tell me what to do. I'm not going to listen to you, right?
Yeah.
If I came to your job. You wouldn't listen to me if I did that.
Exactly. I mean, I definitely see where you're coming from. Like, us as fans, what do we know about long-term booking, you know? We just want to sit front row and cheer for Rusev, you know?
Exactly. And see, and this Rusev Day thing, I think it's hurt him more than it's helped him.
You think so?
I really do. I really do, because number one, Rusev hasn't, Aiden English got Rusev Day over, not Rusev.
Oh, really? That, you think so? Okay. I mean, that's a good point. That's a good
Rusev
point.
Day was cool and all, but until you heard Rusev Day, yeah. Nobody can.
Yeah. By the way, this is the Wednesday morning show. So yesterday on the morning show, I sang that like three times. Like every time, because I was reviewing SmackDown, I had Rich on for a little bit, and then I did like a little 20-25 minute SmackDown review, and every time I mentioned Aiden English and Rusev, I sang that for a little bit. I was like, Rusev Day! It's over in my house, bro. I absolutely love it.
Rusev is the man, and I know fans are eating it up because they want Rusev to be pushed.
Right.
But I think, knowing how Vince is, they're going to take that and say, oh, well, you know what? We'll push him to a certain extent, but not the way you want us to push him, because there's no story to be told with him right now, the way they want to tell it.
It's very valid.
Right, and I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying that's the way it should be, because Rusev should be pushed. But, well, damn, you want everybody pushed at the same time, right? So you want Nakamura and AJ to be pushed? Great. Okay, and then you want New Day and the Usos to be pushed? Great. Okay, and then, well, what are we going to do with the mid-card? Like, there's so many people, and then you want Charlotte, but Becky went on the show this week. Well, hell, we only got 2 hours. Well, why does Ty Dillinger not doing nothing? Well, you know, Breeze Angle should have been on the, like, there's only so many stories they can tell. Somebody has to be left off. So I think Rusev's situation as just a heater who's over is fine for right now.
You know, I think a good thing for them to do would be, you know, to bring Aiden English into that, to get a rub for Aiden English, put him in a tag team.
Well, they did that for a little while. Because you remember when they were trying to figure out who's going to face the Usos, it was Rusev Day, the Aiden and Rusev versus Gable and Benjamin versus the New Day. Yep. So they were a tag team for a while. Now, the problem entails that the Bludgeon Brothers were just built to be monsters, and they were going to have to be pushed eventually.
That's true. And plus, you only got a two-hour show. I forget about the Bludgeon Brothers. I don't know why I'm forgetting about them, because they're being booked as, I mean,
sure,
like the devil himself, you know?
They're not interesting in terms of fans liking them. They're built as the perfect heels. They don't talk. They come, they kick ass, they leave.
Right, right.
And then, you know, New Day and Usos just had one of the greatest tag team feuds of all time. So, you know, it's kind of hard to place them in there. You know, Rusev just got added to the Fatal 4-Way for the United States Championship. And Rusev definitely deserves to be higher than that U.S. title. But I do think, oh, by the way, I forgot to mention Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Baron Corbin, and Dolph Ziggler. Because they're on the show. They gotta be alive. Daniel Bryan's wrestling again. He's on SmackDown. He got to be utilized. But I would have liked to have seen what they did with Rusev and Shane. Because you remember when Rusev got drafted to SmackDown, he was doing those videos where he was attacking Shane McMahon, and they never did anything with that.
Right, right.
That would have been cool. A cool way to kind of start elevating him naturally.
Yeah, I dig it.
You know, you can't just take a guy. I mean, I realize they did it with gender, and that's a completely different situation. That's a needle in a haystack. That's in its own vacuum. But on a regular situation, it's really hard to take a guy who's in the mid-card or lower mid-card with no build and just make him all of a sudden a main eventer overnight. That's really hard to do.
Yeah, and I would argue,
that's never been a main eventer.
Yeah, and you know me, I'm a pretty big gender apologist, but I think that that hurt him a lot that they didn't spend 6 months building him up, that they took in less than 3 weeks, they took him from jobber to world champion contender. You know what I mean?
I know we got to go, but the reason I think it worked with gender and they picked gender for that is because what you just said is exactly what they want you to think. They know gender is not great in the ring. They know gender is not the guy who fans are going to get behind. And I think they did. I don't want to say they did everything wrong because they really tried to get him over. But I think that whole process was Jinder did things backwards. Jinder got pushed so that he could be mid-card. Jinder became world championship champion so he could be a mid-card guy for the rest of his life.
Right, with some legitimacy. He could be a nice United States title holder that's a heel tearing it up. Yeah, I understand that. That's a good point.
Whereas most guys are pushed the Stone Cold way, a mid-carder, to be a main eventer the rest of their life. Jinder was the one guy they tried with the opposite because of so many. One, he has a great unique look. Two, he's Indian. And yes, he's Indian. Just because he was born in Canada doesn't mean he's not Indian.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And they're trying to expand to the Indian market, so it's cool to see a guy of the market you're trying to go into be utilized. It's a pretty big deal, right?
Absolutely. And
number three, they had no other heel to go to at the moment. At the time, when he won the title, they really had nobody else to go to at the moment for a title feud. So everything worked in concert in a perfect situation, I believe.
Yeah, this now, stars kind of aligned for Jinder, didn't they?
And of course, they want, you know, I don't believe there's such a thing as Xbox heat. All heat is heat.
Right.
There's no thing as go away heat to me. Like, as long as you're booing or cheering or making noise, that's heat. That's what they want. And so the fact that fans feel that Jinder got overpushed or pushed too fast or didn't deserve a spot, that only helps his character.
Yeah, absolutely. I know what you mean. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I completely agree.
His boos are earned. Whereas Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn literally had to beat up the most loved guy of the past 5 years who just came back from a 3-year injury to get booed.
So true, man. So true. Well, man, I sure appreciate it. Real quick, before we say our goodbye and we do some plugins and stuff, I want to say I do realize out there in Nerd Nation that I said this was the Wednesday morning show, and it is actually the Thursday morning show. I do apologize about that, because yesterday me and Rich did the SmackDown review, and SmackDown comes on Tuesdays, so I got my days confused there, but you know, that's what happens when you record at 6:30 in the morning. You know what I mean? But my main man, Ray, I just want to say I appreciate you getting up early and coming on yet again. Everybody, I want y'all to check out Ray on his podcast, the SMC Wrestling Podcast. Check him out on Twitter at It's Ray Cash. Ray, you got anything else you want to plug right now?
I appreciate you having me on, man. I feel like I ranted a little too much today. Sorry about that.
No, man. That's what this show's here for, man. This like we were talking about before we went on air, I'm still trying to think of a name. So if you think of any names, shoot me a text. I guess right now I'm going to call it maybe The Rabbit Hole with Ray and Jordan. I don't know. Come down the rabbit hole with Ray.
Nice ring to it.
Yeah, and it can just kind of be our thing, man. Every time you come on the show, we'll just go down the rabbit hole. You know what I'm saying?
I like that. That actually might work, yeah.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
But thank you for having me on like you always do, man. I really appreciate it.
Hey, man, I appreciate you coming on and giving me your opinions and views, man. I absolutely love to have you on, man. Seriously, if you go back and listen to yesterday's episode when I had Rich on, it's up on iTunes right now, man. I told him, I was like, man, I have our boy Ray on all the time. I absolutely love to have that guy on. And he sung your praises as well. So anytime, man, you've got an open invitation. Anytime you want to come on the show, if you're bored one day, you want to get up, you know, anytime. Or we can record, even if we don't record in the morning, we can do an afternoon show, whatever you want to do, brother.
Appreciate it, man. And shout out to the Army Rich.
Yeah, man. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, brother. Well, I will talk to you soon, man. I'll shoot you a message here after a while. And thank you again for coming on. Everybody, check out Ray at the SMC Podcast. And we'll talk to you soon, brother. All right?
All right, man. Appreciate it.
All right, brother. Talk to you soon.
All right.
All right, bye. All right, Nerd Nation. I want y'all to check out our sponsors, Copper Canyon Coffee, White Label Juice Co., and Shirtspace.com. We appreciate y'all coming in for the morning show. We had a lot of fun going down that rabbit hole. We talked on three main topics. It was a lot of fun. Ray is one of our favorite co-hosts that we could ever even imagine having on the show. He's just a great guy with some very awesome views. I can't wait to have him on again. And everyone out there at Nerd Nation, I just want to say thank y'all for tuning in. And everyone out there, stay too sweet.